Everybody, I'm Kenny again. So I recognize some of you guys. Some of you have moved chairs, I've noticed. But we're going to go ahead and just keep on going through. So this time around, I'm talking about fast application switching and tombstoning. So basically what you're going to do when your application is not running, so when you are deactivated, and also some of the stuff that you can do in the background to have your application be able to continue doing stuff even when it's not up front. So again, this is a lot of stuff that is new with Mango. Some of the things, if you've been doing development with the Windows Phone for a while, like tombstoning, should be a little bit familiar to you. But for the most part, with the stuff that we're seeing around like fast application switching and the background tasks, those are new in the new version here. All right, so for this one, what we're going to do is we're going to go through the application state management, starting with the fast application switching, talking about tombstoning. We're going to look at some of the background tasks, including some things like setting up some scheduled notifications, and then how you can do the application navigation and application switching. So the first thing, I wanted to show exactly what fast application switching was so you kind of would know what that is. So I will launch a new Visual Studio here. And I'll just go ahead and create a new project just so that I can do a Silverlight app. Bring up the emulator and kind of give an example here. So right here, I've got the emulator chosen. I hit start, and it's going to bring that up. So that'll take a second for it to launch that. But there we go. Let's see, and we can see that OK? Yes, we can. Cool. So as soon as that comes up, it's going to launch into the application. So as soon as that brings up the actual page there, my application is now active, it's in memory, it's what's running. It's getting all of the CPU cycles, it's getting the ability for you to be able to do stuff inside of that application. But you can move away from this application. For example, if I click on this start button right here, I'll come back to the start screen, I can launch an Internet Explorer, it'll do some stuff inside of here. I can navigate around inside of Internet Explorer, I can bring up the search page, there we go. And yes, so that'll bring up that page. I can then go back to the start screen, move over here, go into settings, and basically all of these things are added to the back stack. So if I were to push and hold the back button, it gives me the ability to kind of go through all of these. So all of these are suspended right now, and I have the ability to bring back any of them and bring them into active memory. So for example, if I were to click on the search, it brings that back up. And that becomes the active application. It takes it onto the top of that stack. So instead of being behind the settings page, now it's in front. So when I hit back, I go back to the system settings page. So I have the ability to navigate back and forth through those. And any time that the application is not in front, it is not receiving CPU cycles. It's not receiving the ability to actually do anything there unless you've set up background tasks, in which case it's really kind of running separate from the UI side of it. But you have those running or suspended, or you can also have them be unloaded from memory if you have a certain amount of them running already, and in which case you'll have a little bit of time to be able to save some settings in a process called tombstoning. So I'll show you some of that here. All right. So essentially, this is your application lifecycle. You start off running, then you become deactivated, then you become dormant, and then maybe you become reactivated, so you're running again. So when you become deactivated, you will save your state. When it becomes dormant, your phone resources will be detached. You'll have your threads and timer suspended, so they will no longer be running. There's some important things to do here around error handling, especially. So if you were, for example, connected to a network connection and actively transferring some stuff down, when you come back, that network transfer will likely have timed out. It will have brought up an error for you, so you'll have an error message waiting for you that you have to handle. And because of the kind of concept of this, the multitasking that we have inside of there, you might have some unexpected out-of-turn execution kind of stuff where if everything was just going straight down the line, it would all work, but then something comes up and it doesn't work anymore. Yeah, question? Hold on a second, and we'll get there. So At this point, you actually have your state preserved. There's a, when you return back into your application, you have a variable you can check that says, is application instance preserved? And if that's true, then you have all of that preserved. You didn't have to reload that back from the permanent memory. So you can just basically reconstruct your stuff from state. So that's what is a fast app resume. On the other side, where you actually lose your application, kind of there, you've got it where it's running, it becomes deactivated, it goes to dormant, and then, for example, if there's a certain number of applications already running so that you don't have enough memory to comfortably launch the next application, the oldest one, like basically the application on the bottom of the stack that is deactivated, will be Tombstone. It'll be taken out of memory so that you can make room for new applications. And so that goes down to Tombstone, but then you can reactivate that and then go back into a running application. So essentially, same kind of thing happens. You're going to lose access to your resources. Your threads of time get suspended when it becomes dormant. But then the oldest application is going to be tombstoned. And the application state instance preserved is going to be false. So you know that you can't just bring that back. You actually have to load that back in from the actual permanent, like the isolated storage or the permanent storage on the device. So it's going to go with the kind of, if you've seen one of the applications come back in this state, it'll say resuming, dot, dot, dot. It'll load all of those things back up and then allow you to show your UI again. So if you look at it, essentially this is the full life cycle for everything. When you get your application launching, you get an event that gets raised there. Your page will get an on-navigated to event that gets raised, and now your application's running. If you navigate away from that page, you get the onNavigated from method. And if that's closing the application, you'll get an application closing event. If you navigate away from the page and deactivate the application by moving somewhere else, not actually closing the application. So one of the differences here, when I was showing you the fast application switching, I used that start button. By pressing the start button, I'm actually basically starting up the start menu right there. But the application is still there. If I press the back button to the very first page of when you loaded it and go one step further, then it's coming out of that application and that application is going to be terminated. So it's going to kill that application. You get some closing events and some stuff there. That's where you get that application closing event coming back up. If you hit the start menu or if you launch another application somehow, that's going to go through this dormant application. So you'll go down to dormant. You may go to tombstoned, but when you come back to being activated, you'll get an application activated event, an on-navigated to, and you'll be back running. So when you have your application activated event, that's where you've got that activated event args E. E dot is application instance preserved. If it's true, your stuff's still in memory. You don't have to go to a permanent storage. It's going to be a lot faster to resume those things. If it's false, it's tombstone. You need to reload it. So there's a few different places that you need to look to know what you're actually bringing back in around the launching of your application and the navigating to your application and the activating of your application. So you need to go through all of those to be able to get a consistent feel to your application so that no matter how your application gets closed, you'll be able to retain state where appropriate. So again, kind of to look through this, if you're deactivating your application, you get a deactivated app. You get the unnavigated from and the deactivated. If you have a media player, it's going to be paused. If you have a media element, that's also going to be paused. Your sound effect instance, you're going to stop that. You're pause that, rather. Vibrate controller, so if you have the actual phone doing a vibrate, you're going to stop that. The photo camera, you're going to have to dispose that. And you're going to save your page or global state for your entire application. You'll then deattach any of the resources. So for example, XNA audio, pause, sensors, notifications are suppressed. Your networking is canceled, sockets are disconnected, media element is disconnected, and the camera is disposed. All of those things are going to happen. You have to bring all of those back when you reactivate your application if you want to reuse those. And that gives you a dormant app. On the other side, when you're coming back, you have to resume your audio, resume your sensors. Your networking is going to be completed with cancellation, so you have to handle that, as I mentioned. And you have to redo everything for sockets, media element, and camera. You have to bring those back in. When you get the activated and the on-navigated to, you have to play everything back again, create a new camera, and if it's tombstone, you have to restore everything from that isolated storage. So there's two types of storage that you can use. There's isolated storage and state storage. State storage is the faster of the two, but it's not permanent. Isolated storage is the permanent one, so it's the slower of them. It's isolated from all of the other applications. So if you have two applications that you wrote and you want them to talk to each other, they don't even know that they're both installed on the phone. They can't talk to each other through the file storage. They'll have to communicate somehow, either through a background process or through some endpoint that they communicate with, and wait and try and talk to the other one when the other one gets launched. They're not going to be running simultaneously, and they won't be able to talk to each other on the phone. They have to treat it as if they're talking to each other from a remote system. So it's completely isolated there. It's kind of slow. It's permanent, though. So you can actually store everything on there. You can store your settings. And towards the end, I'll mention something that will actually help make this a little bit easier to write to for tombstoning your applications. State storage is used for storing the state of an application, so it makes sense. It's just used for storing the name value pairs to make those applications dormant, be able to use them and restore them back. And it's quick and can bring things back very easily, but it's a non-permanent kind of thing. So let's go ahead and take a look at a few different examples of this to see it in action. So we'll start off with one of them that's very basic, with no storage. Okay. So let's go ahead and just take a look here. So this is my main page right here. Let's go ahead and jump into the code so we'll see what we're looking at. We essentially have two pages on this. We have a main page where you can add entries into a log. So I can hit store, or I can hit view log. View log will take me to my second page. And on here, I'm just going to print out any of the log entries that I have in memory. So the way that they communicate between each other, there's actually a few different ways that you can do this. If you want to launch another page from a page, you can use the navigation and give it a query string, pass data that way. Or you can actually store data at the application level, and then all of your pages have the ability to see it. So in this case, I'm actually storing it at the application level. So as I add things into it, I do app this app equals app.current as app, and then this app.log entry I set into the text box. So that's where I'm going to drop this into here. On navigated from, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to take the text, not hit F. I'm going to take that text and drop it into that log entry. So I'm going to be able to push things on either way. When I click store button, I get that same context, save this in there, I append it, and then I clear the log so that it'll be open for me to type something new into it. So I'm not doing anything to actually store this data between launches. So if I run this, I should have a blank log. So here's the add entry. I hit view log. There's nothing here. I hit back. I go over to here. And let's go ahead and type something in. So page up to get the actual keyboard. Hello world. And I hit store. Then if I hit view log, there it is. So I can do that multiple times. And if I view the log, they're all there. So because it's all in memory, it's active in memory in the application level, they're all going to be stored between the pages. But as soon as I leave this application, it's going to be deactivated. And as long as it's actually still deactivated there, I'll be able to see it. But if I get completely out of the application, it's going to be gone. So let's go ahead and just launch something else. Looks good. Come back. There's my log. It's still there because it never left memory. But if I hit back here, the application is now gone. You'll notice that I stopped debugging, but the application is still installed on the emulator. So if I run this, go into my log, there's nothing there. So as soon as it's gone, it's gone. So let's take a look at another example that we have on here, the second one on here, where we're actually doing some of the storage. So we're saving some stuff to isolated storage in this one. So what we are going to do, if I run this guy, it's going to look exactly the same. But I've added something in here to make it store. So let's go ahead and view the log first. There's nothing there. Test one. Store that. View the log. And there it is. So I'm actually saving that into a storage as well as putting it into the application. So if I go here, launch another app, go back, it's right there just as it was before. It was still in memory. But if I actually kill the application and relaunch it, it is still there. So we actually did that by putting a handler into the application closing event. Let me scroll down to here. So we have this thing that does the saved isolated storage, which basically is creating those name value pairs, dropping stuff into the isolated storage and putting it there. So this is done on application closing. And then I have application launching, load from isolated storage. So isolated in the terms of the application that stores it is the only one that can read it. So other applications, even if you wrote them, can't read it. Yeah. So the question was around exchanging data between applications. Yeah, so essentially you have to go outside of the process to be able to talk to something else, usually through like a web service or some type of external communication. Yeah. What was that? So for the isolated storage, is there a space limit? Yes, there is a space limit. It's the available free space on the phone. So if you have 8 gigs of free space, you can use all of it, but you really shouldn't, because somebody, like if you're using the application and you suddenly find out that a application is using all your memory, you're going to uninstall that application. So if you're going to be using a lot of that kind of thing, so if you're downloading podcasts or you're doing something like that for where you would actually need to use a large amount of storage, make sure that the user knows that that's happening and give them the ability to manage their own memory. So if you want to be able to delete some things in there, don't save it and never give them the ability to change any of that. Another question here? So the question was around viewing isolated storage. We can look at this a little bit later. There is a isolated storage explorer that allows you to take a look at that inside of here from the developer side. So we're not going to cover that on this directly, but we can definitely look at that a little bit later. Cool. So let me go ahead and show another thing on here real quick, just so we can actually get through all of this. Where were we at? Application launching. There we go. So application launching. So code to execute when the application is launching. This code will not execute when the application is reactivated. So that's a important part on there. It's going to launch sometimes, but not always. Let's see, another side on here is on the, not the launching, but the application closing. Again, here, code to execute when the application is closing. This code will not execute when the application is deactivated. So when you're deactivating this, you're not going to actually have the ability to bring that back. So one of the things that we can do on here is we can actually change the behavior of this application so that it will tombstone. By default, it's going to tombstone only when it needs to use the memory. The number of applications and the amount of things that you can have actually running vary depending on how memory intensive each one of them is, and for some of the things where if you're running in a power saving mode, you might not have as many of them current, just to be able to, yeah, so it's not going to be something where you always, after the fifth app, you get tombstoned. So to make it a little bit easier, we actually have a setting that you can change. And if you go into here, we're going to say project, properties, and there it is, debug tombstone upon deactivation while debugging. So we'll check that. That will allow us to actually get this out of memory. It'll be a little bit different when we run this because we'll be able to throw this out of memory. And when it gets deactivated, it's going to kill the application through the tombstoning. So let's try this, build that, and run the application. So if I choose view log, it's still there. It's in isolated storage. Test 2, store that. View log, looks good. Exit out of here, launch the application again right here, and I don't have the test 2 in there. So it depends on actually when you have that launching and closing, they might not always run if you don't have the correct, if you don't exit the way that you were expecting them to. So there's actually a deactivated and a activated event that we will need to handle as well to make it more consistent. So let's go ahead and do that. That's the third demo that we got right down here. This one is complete between all of them. Okay. So this time, I've got the deactivated is going to save to isolated storage and save to state. The application closing is going to save to isolated storage. The launching is going to load from isolated storage. And the closing is going to save to isolated storage. So in this case, with the closing, you don't need to save to the state because it's not going to come back. We're not going to save the state on this one, so we don't need to save it. We're just going to save it into persistent storage because it has to be reloaded into here. So let's do the same thing that we just did before. And go to properties, debug tombstone, and we'll test this. And if this works, Okay. So the comment was around explaining how to basically keep things running using the back button to stop debugging and how to move through kind of the different scenarios. Is that right? Yeah. Right. Okay. So the comment was on there. So I kind of mentioned some of the things, the difference between if I hit the start button here, how the application is still running. If I hold down this back button, it's still there. It's just been suspended. Whereas if I am in here and I hit the back button to bring back this, you get kind of the resuming thing. If I hit back again, it'll actually close the application out of memory. So yeah, there's definitely a difference between closing the application by backing all the way out of it, in which case it just unloads everything from memory, and pressing the start button, which is going to suspend it, tombstone it, and be able to do everything, basically put it onto the stack of suspended applications on there. Yeah, so there's definitely a difference between doing each one of those things, and that's where we need to kind of keep track of what we're doing. And the option inside of the debugging gives you the ability to do a little bit more fine control over it, to be able to make it tombstone when you leave it, so that you can test your tombstoning code. Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay. So the question on that one, and that's a great question for this. If I am running an application, like here, and I hit the start menu, and then run that same application again, it will actually start a new instance of that. It'll dump the old one out of memory and bring a new one into instance. So throws away the old one and you get a new one. You can only have one copy of it running at any given time. And that's actually really important because depending on how your application works, you may want to actually save some of the old settings from the previous running application. For example, if you're running a game, you've got a card game or something like that in there, you might want to, when you launch a new one, say, hey, when you last quit, you were playing a game, would you like to resume that game or start a new one? Instead of just giving them a new one and having them completely lose the old one, because they can't go back to that previous thing. So depending on the style of your application, it may be where every time you launch it new, you want a new setting, or you might want to maintain some of the previous stuff from there, or at least prompt the user, do they want to keep their old stuff? One question right back here.
In an instance like that, sorry to use that word, what events do you get for the first instance?
So in an instance like what, when you're...
If a user has kicked off an application,
Okay. So in the instance where you go to the start menu and relaunch the application, it's just like you're starting it fresh. So what does the first instance get? So you do have the ability. So let me go ahead and drop into here. Here's the application closing and the application deactivated. So I'll go ahead and launch this one. There we go. So if I do this, here's my application deactivated. So it's been deactivated. I'm still here. If I launch this one again, it basically kills the old one that they had on there to start the new one. So you need to make sure that that's coming through. And let's turn off the, because it's actually doing this a little bit differently, turn that off for now. And do this. There's my deactivated. Here we go. So I'm actually still, there we go. Yep, so we didn't get the closing. So you need to, there. If you go to, let's see, we've actually got, similar to the PowerPoints and everything that I was showing, there is a full walkthrough of exactly what gets fired every single time. So it's going to be depending on the settings that you have on there, depending on whether you're being directly deactivated or whether you're coming in from a new launch. So we do have a link on the MSDN page, and I think I've got it somewhere in here. At the very least, I will make sure to bring that up. But we do have a walkthrough of exactly what gets fired in every one of those instances. Okay, so the last thing, let me bring this back up here and prove that it was actually working. Tombstone, build that. Yep, run that. Get rid of these breakpoints. And view my log. Okay, and then store that. There we go. Add another one. Store that. Looks good. Go back over to here. Launch a new guy. There's those. And if I add a test 3, store it, view, back. I now can launch this. And I got all three of them. So that gives you a consistent thing between both the tombstoning and the deactivation. So you have the ability to store those. And if I jump back to here and start this application, I get my splash screen. I get everything loaded back into it. I don't resume back where I was at. So that's not giving you like the fast application switching. It's actually creating a new instance and then loading your values from memory. So it's going to take a little bit longer, especially if you're saving something more than a couple of lines of text. Okay, so next bit on here. Some of the multitasking capabilities. So we have some background agents that you can set up. There's two types that you can do with the standard type of background agents. One of them is periodic. It'll run every so often. The other one is a resource intensive. It will run for a certain amount of time and give you more of the ability to kind of do some things like do some data processing, and then it'll go away. So periodic can run every certain X number of somethings, which is definable, so you can actually set that. It will run every about 30 minutes and give you a little bit of time each time. So we'll go into those a little bit deeper. You've got a background transfer service for file transfers. You can set up alarms and reminders, and you have background audio. So all of those have the ability to communicate, and each runs a little bit differently depending on the scenario that you're working with. So the background agents, I mentioned periodic and resource intensive. You can have one of each per application. So you can have one resource intensive and one periodic. They start off in the foreground, so you initialize them, you basically kick them off, but they don't run until you actually deactivate your application, until the application is no longer running. Then they'll have the chance to run. But there's also some other things where they might not necessarily run until certain conditions are met, which I'll go over in a second. And then also they are persisted across reboots, so if you make one that is a periodic agent that runs every 30 minutes and does some things there, when you kill it or when you restart the phone, they'll still be there. The user has the ability to control them, so they can turn them off, so don't rely on them to be there, because they might not be. And they can run for up to 14 days. They can be renewed by relaunching your application, but if the user doesn't launch your application at least every 14 days, then your tasks will go away. So here's some of the differences between the two of them. So the periodic agents run every about 30 minutes. So it's actually between 20 and 40 minutes, depending on what else is happening on your phone. But in most cases, you should be getting about 30 minutes. Don't try and set your clock by it or anything. It's not going to be exact. They're going to last for at most 25 seconds. You can tell it, I'm done, and it'll go away. So you can take less than that 25 seconds. You can't get more than 25 seconds. It has to run in less than 6 megs of memory and with less than 10% of the CPU. On the resource intensive side, they have to rely on a few things. For example, you have to be plugged into external power. You have to have a non-cell network if you're going to be doing any of the data stuff, so you have to be connected to Wi-Fi, for example. You have to have a majority of your battery charged. And they can run for 10 minutes, but they still have to stay under that 6 megs of memory. So again, you may never have this happen. You may set up a resource intensive agent and the user never plugs their phone in. So you or never plugs their phone into the point where they get charged more than the required amount. So it might not ever run. So never take a background agent and kind of assume that it's going to do its thing. When you are running your application, you want to make sure that something is actually happening. You want to do it when you have the cycles on the foreground as much as possible. You can set these up as, you know, if they happen to close the application, then maybe the next time that I launch my application, the stuff will be done for me. But don't rely on it to be 100% like this is going to happen by the time they launch the application the next time. So it's not a 6 meg transfer. It is using 6 megs of memory during that 10 minutes that it has on there. There's another thing called a file transfer, like you can do the file transfer agent kind of thing. So it's a background transfer, and it's actually, we'll mention that in a second. There's another question over here. So if you're, the question was, if you're connected to external power, why do you need battery to be greater than 90%? Because if I plug in my phone and I'm at 10%, and something is happening that's causing my phone to actually not be charging, then I pull my phone out 10 minutes later and I don't get any additional battery life, I'm not really happy. So it's primarily to make sure that there is enough battery to support it so that it can actually, when you if you plug your phone in at 10%, I'm more interested that my phone charges than that your background process runs. So that's where it's got that requirement there. Yeah. So the question was, if you kick off, and it's true for either one of these agents, does it run it until, or does it queue it until the criteria are met, you know, the occurrence or the external power, all these kind of things? It's just going to sit there. It can last through reboots and everything, so it could be there for the entire 14 days and never run. But if you plug it in on day 13 and get that full charge and have all of the requirements for it, it will run. So if you launch your application again, you can pull it up and say, you know, have you done anything? Do I have new stuff in my isolated storage that I've had created from that? No, that hasn't happened yet. So you'll have to do it on the foreground. So it's more of, let's queue all of this stuff up, try and do as much of it now, and if they happen to kill my process, then hopefully they'll be able to do all of this, and I'll have a further step than I was before. But yeah, you don't have a guarantee that it's ever going to run. Just that it will run as soon as it has the ability to do so. And yeah, there's some limitations. So 18 periodic agents or less, and again, that depends on some things, like if you're in battery saver mode, it's not going to have multiple of these kind of running in the background. So yeah, you can put it up there. You can tell it to wait. It'll wait patiently until all of the conditions are met, but might not ever happen. Okay, and... so here's what you can do. With your background agents, you can affect things like the tiles. So this is actually a great step. We're going to be doing some more stuff around live tiles. I think Kevin is going to be covering that in a bit. But if you have an application, you used to have to communicate with an external service to be able to update anything. You can now update your tiles based on an actual background task running on the phone itself. So if you wanted to do something like check the weather every 30 minutes, you can have that background agent just hit a web service, check the weather, update your tile, and then be done. So you don't have to run a background service just to handle the tile notifications, and you don't have to send those down. You can affect toast, so you can send pop-ups, and of course toast, and we'll talk about this in a second, but that's the little message that you get for a notification. That can launch your application to be able to, if you finish a task, you can have it launch a toast. When you tap the toast, it brings it up, and you'll say, like, processing done, you can launch your app again. You can access location, network, you can write to isolated storage, you can read from isolated storage, you can access sockets, and a lot of the framework APIs are available, but not all of them. That link down at the bottom there, which is available from the learning page on the create.msdn.com site, will list exactly what you can do, but most of the framework APIs you can communicate with. You cannot make it display anything outside of sending notifications through Tile and Toast, so you can't control somebody's screen. You can't access pretty much anything on the XNA side. So a lot of those are very, you know, graphics intensive or processing intensive. You can do other things to do similar capabilities, but you can't access anything inside of the XNA namespace. You can't access the microphone and camera because that would be really weird. So some of the sensors are restricted on there, so you can. So the question was around Bluetooth. So we don't have a direct Bluetooth stack for custom Bluetooth profiles. The other thing, the only thing that you can do with Bluetooth on the Windows phone at the moment is through keyboard or headset. And so that would be under kind of the input and the camera and such. So no, you would not be able to. You can't play audio, although you have a background audio API that I'm going to go into in a little bit, which you can access. But yeah, you can't make the phone kind of like do communication through any of the other capabilities through like microphone or audio or those kind of things. Yes? So you have the ability to get some of those. It's in a restricted form, so that's where you'd want to hit that to get the full details on that. But yes, you can, and actually I'm going to show kind of a little thing on how you can do that. So, but for in-depth, that link. So let's take a look at this location. Okay. I can close all these. Let's actually close the emulator so I can bring that back up fresh. And we'll do some multitasking stuff. All right. So in this example, what we're going to be doing is basically setting up a background task that will be able to launch some notification through a toast just to show that we know that it is actually working. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, you'll notice there's a start tracking button right here. When we click that start tracking button, we're going to set up a periodic task. We're going to start doing the tracking and by finding the scheduled action service and set that up. So let's go ahead and run this. It will start a new emulator so I get fresh without any of the other captain's log stuff in memory. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this guy and start the tracking service, just make sure that everything's working, and then show where you can do the configuration on this. All right, so standard application here. If I do that one, testing, store, view, looks good. Go back. I'm going to hit start tracking. So now it says stop tracking. It has started the tracking service on there. I can do some things where I've got the location. I can drop some points in there. I can go over to view log. There's stuff that I got on there. So the comment was still running.
The background task won't run until you exit.
Precisely. So the background task here hasn't started yet. So we're not going to get any pop-ups. We're not going to do anything. We've set it up and basically said, hey, we want you to run. But it's not going to run until I actually exit out of this. So let's go ahead and drop this guy. There we go. Let's take a look at our settings. If I go into application, background tasks, you can see there's captain's log and it is set to on. So I can control this from here and be able to say whether or not we have the ability to actually configure anything inside of this side. And if this is actually working properly, which I believe that it should be, there we go. I get some toast. So captain's log loaded. So that showed that that ran. So I do have a background task. It loaded the toast because I'm not in this anymore. So I set up a periodic task and it ran. So that was the fastest 30 minutes I've seen in quite some time. All right, so let's go ahead and drop back over to here. And the reason that we were actually able to see that, I think I've got this right there. So you have the ability to do this. Obviously, you can't do this in real code. So if you were to submit this to the marketplace, this wouldn't fly. But what you've got is you have the ability to do some things like schedule action service.launch for test, task name, task span from second. So I actually told it, run my test every 60 seconds instead of, you know, run my test and let it actually go for the full 30 minutes. That would be an incredibly difficult debugging session. So that makes it a lot easier for us when we're doing this. And again, you can do the conditional compiling in there and everything. Oh. If you heard that, that was another one of these pop-ups here. So it was another minute past. And that'll just keep running in the background. So let's see. If we actually want to debug this thing on here, you'll notice that when you exit out of this and have a background task running, you don't actually lose your application debug state. It's continually running in there, even if it's gone, because the application is gone, but your background task is still there. So you can put breakpoints into a background task without a problem, and everything else still works. So let's go ahead and jump into here. Here's my periodic task. And I believe, let's see, start tracking is here. Here's a periodic task. This is where it sets it up. Move agent, periodic task, there we go. Dot find, dot show is enabled. Periodic task name. Nope, launch it again. I missed it. Launch for test, periodic task name. Okay, so this one is going to be inside of right here. There. Mm-hmm. I think I put it in my app, which is why I didn't see it. Yeah, there we go. So this is, that should be inside of here. Where is the actual task coming in? Settings enabled, application. All right, so when I create this, and I add this into here, I've got my periodic task. Code is huge, so I can't see the whole thing. Do-do-do. Start tracking, tagging, do-do. Task name. Oop. Launched, and I didn't break, so that was the wrong spot. There we go. Start hacking. Not fine. Periodic task. It's in here somewhere. I'll bring it up afterwards so we can do that, but trust me, it's there. You can hit break. You can do it. It is still running inside of there, so. Oh, there we go. That's why. There we go. Start tracking, exit out of there. There we go, run that, bring that up. All right, so we'll let that sit for a while. If it hits the breakpoint, we should be notified. Cool. So next thing we're gonna talk about here is on around file transfer tasks. So you can create a background task to do file transfer. This one's a little bit different than either of those other two, because when you start the task, it's going to start running immediately. It'll just continue to run after you've left. So you have the ability to get a handle into it and be able to see how much you've transferred back and forth. So you can start a transfer task. If they close your application, you don't lose your handles onto those files. They just keep running. When you bring them back, you can check to see what their state is and see what's happening inside of them. So you can run through there. You can monitor the status. You can fetch from HTTP or HTTPS. Right now, there's no FTP support, unfortunately. And you do have a queue of active transfers, because it will run through all of them. If somebody else is doing some transfers on there, it's not going to overwrite everything on top of that. Yeah. Did that hit it? No. Oh, well. So there's some policies inside of here. There's a maximum upload file size of 5 megabytes. If you are doing a download, there's a 20 meg limit if you're on cell. There's a 100 meg limit on Wi-Fi. So that is the actual, like, the limit itself. There are ways that you can change some of the stuff inside of there. You shouldn't, unless you specifically have asked the user and the user says that it's okay. And even these defaults, the 20 megs, the 100 megs, and the 5 megs, you should still check to make sure that the user wants to do it, if it's going to be towards the max size of those. Because if you're going to be pulling down 20 megs over the user's data, and they didn't know that you were going to be pulling down 20 megs, or if they thought that you were going to be pulling down a much smaller file, then they might be surprised at the end of the month when they find that their bill has been much larger than they would have expected. So yeah, you can change some of these. You shouldn't necessarily do so. So you can find out how many files you're currently transferring, what is active. When you launch an application again, you can go back and get those handles to see what they've got. And then you can manage those inside of there, so you can show what's going on. And that link right there, again, it's one of the resources that we've made available, gives a list of how you can actually manage that transfer list. So let's show that one. Let's kill this. And I'll kill this one too. And I'll find that in a second while we're doing the Q&A. Okay, so this is the file transfer one. So inside of this one, so there's the fetch file button. So inside of here, there is just basically a button that you click on. Here we go. So there's that start fetch. It's going to fetch this picture, and it's going to start a transfer request and download the file, and then it'll add a transfer. So it'll actually start doing the transfer and listen to the transfer progress. So here's the progress changed event. So it'll do that, and then the transfer status change, so it'll know when it's finished. So let's go ahead and hit run. Hopefully my internet's still working here. And so when I hit this one, I'm going to click on it. It's going to show a transfer dialog. So it'll show how much of it is transferred on there. And then when it's finished, it should load the file. There we go. So I hit start fetch. I could go and do something else right now, but I want to show right here. It's actually showing how much is received. If I exit out of this, if I come back into it, there we go. Stuff's happening. It's a big file. Loading a bunch of stuff. I wonder what it's going to be. Rob Miles controls this content. I imagine if I got him upset. Something's going to happen. I want to make sure that it actually does the load first. There we go. All right, we got a picture. So if I hit the start fetch and exit out of this and then kind of brought that back up. So it's got the background and everything inside of there, but it's not reattaching to what they had there. So that's some additional code that we didn't put into this. You can do it. You can come back and bring all that stuff back up, but we're not. All right. Okay. Yes? Yeah, so essentially what happens, the question was around what happens with the file transfer when you close the actual application itself. Because it is a background thread and everything, you have the ability to continue that running. And then you can get that back by checking to see, you know, what active transfers do I have, or by trying to load from your isolated storage, which is where it should be saving things into, and saying, okay, is that file there if I don't have any of those file transfer handles anymore? So you do need to save the information about the file that you're transferring somewhere in isolated storage so you know where to look. Otherwise, you know, you kind of have to look through isolated storage and you're like, okay, well, what am I doing with stuff? I mean, there's a new file here. I don't know why it's here. So you need to actually store some of that. You need to save some of that into it and be able to work with it from there. Yeah, another question over here. So the question was around if my demos are on the memory stick. I don't know what's on the memory stick. I haven't seen it. These are on the memory stick? Brilliant. All right. I haven't yet seen that. I know that they were all on the chairs this morning when I came in, but they weren't there last night when I left. So somebody put them there. Memory stick fairy. What's that now? We can take a look at what's on there and everything. If we're doing something here, I can definitely point you at where to get this type of demo if that's not on there for whatever reason. So we'll figure it out. Okay. So for audio playback agents, these are similar to the file transfer agents in that you basically will launch one of them. It'll continue to run while your application is running, but then when you leave, it can keep on running. So you don't have to close your application. You don't have to do anything like that. You just basically start it up, let it run. So you can have the ability to do like playlists or files or some things there. You can have things streamed, pull from isolated storage, play from different sources. And as you're going through working with the audio, You do have the ability to subscribe to things like if the file's about to finish playing, you can do something to queue up the next one. So you can pull inside of, everything inside of here. You do have integration, so when you press like the volume up button, you'll be able to see what's playing and you'll be able to control the playback of that in the transfer there. You can launch it directly from like the start menu. You can do the volume control. You can do the music and video hub inside of there, so you can integrate it into the rest of the phone. And you can integrate it into parts of your application by getting back information about that playback, similar to how when we were doing the file transfer, we were able to see that transfer state. You'll be able to get the state of whatever you're doing with the playback. So you have scheduled notifications. This is basically like one of the other tasks that we have. You create something and say, at this time, I want you to do this. And it gives you the ability to set up either a task reminder or a kind of an alarm. They do persist across reboots. But if you turn off your phone, that time passes, and then you turn it back on. You're not guaranteed that it would have run, so you just need to make sure that that's, again, one of the things where if you set it for a certain time, the phone's got to be there during that time. It is going to use the user settings. Question here? I'll show you. Yeah, so there's a picture right after this one. Consistent with the user user experience on there, it's the on-phone notification, so like this. So okay, so the question was around if the phone is about to ring, can you capture that in a background task? No. So you don't have the ability to intercept any of the standard phone type of communication. So you have the ability to push your own stuff here. You don't have the ability to pull from other people's stuff. So the question was, if I wanted to look up a phone number from a spammer when somebody's calling me and just be able to see, like, you know, if I don't have them in my caller ID, be able to look it up, I won't be able to do that? No, you would not. Yeah. Okay, so the alarms versus reminders, this is kind of the difference on here. Alarms, they just pop up, kind of a message box kind of thing. You can snooze and dismiss like normal. You can customize what they've got on the sound. You don't have the ability to jump into an application from there. And they can't stack, so if one of them comes up and another one is coming up, like, it won't give you the ability to do, like, on the right where it says 2 of 4. So it's a more rich thing with reminders. You have the ability to do all of the snoozing and dismissing and everything. You can launch applications from it, follows the settings that they have for the rest of the stuff on the phone, and it'll actually integrate with the rest of the reminder. So if your reminder pops up at the same time as my meeting reminder from Outlook, those will use the same UX. So to create one of these, basically you go through here, say egg reminder equals new reminder, give it a begin time, give it some content to be able to show. You can show where it's going to navigate to if you actually launch that, and it'll create all of this. So let's go ahead and see that. Although, before we do that, you also have the ability to find an existing one by name, so they're all treated by name inside of there. You can bring them back, change them, remove them, do anything there. So let's take a look at that. Egg timer. All right, so for this, basically what you do is you're going to choose an amount of time, and after that amount of time has passed, you'll be able to actually bring up that type of an event. So how many seconds you want to wait on here? This is fast-boiled eggs. So let's go ahead and just say 5 seconds. You'll notice, waiting for egg, start. Eggs away! So now it's going to wait there. It's not guaranteed at the second level. You're basically saying, okay, after about this much time passes, and as soon as it actually starts processing some of these background tasks and everything. So give it a second. There we go. So gives me the notification. I can snooze it. I can dismiss it. You don't want to snooze your egg. And you can actually launch this, and it will take you to your application inside of there. So let me start the timer. Exit out of the application. Wait that for a couple of seconds again here for that to launch up so that I will be able to actually launch into that application. And do eggs. There we go. Launch that. And then we get the egg ready. Question, yes.
Is it possible to disable that use button for very that same reason? You don't want to steal your egg.
So the question was, is it possible to disable the snooze button? No, but it's basically up to the user to do what they want to do. So if you are very insistent on that kind of thing, it's their choice what they want to do on there. So if that comes up and they hit snooze, their egg burns. All right, so let's jump back over here. So you can customize quite a bit of the reminder. Question was just about the customization. If I bring this back up to here, this is some of the stuff that you can do inside of here. So you can set the begin time, the content, the recurrence type, the navigation URI, and you can customize all of these things. Beyond that, if you want to customize the look and feel and everything, you would have to do that by that launch into an application. So they would have to launch it from the reminder to a page, like I had with the egg, and you can put any customization there, but it goes directly into the same user experience that you're seeing with the phone itself. Let me go ahead and go through the review, and then we can do some questions, because we're just about out of time. So essentially, application has the ability to create background processes like the periodic and resource intensive. Once you've stopped an application, you can set up notifications, whether it's running or not. You can have audio playback running alongside it and after it closes. Same thing with the file transfer. Applications that are background processes can communicate through isolated storage. They are basically the same application running, but not with shared memory. And then Visual Studio, you can debug those. I'll show you that, I'm sure, even though I didn't get the right event to fire actually there. And then the bonus, the thing that I mentioned, is Tombstone Helper. So Tombstone Helper makes it a lot easier to tombstone your applications if you want to persist a bunch of the UI from, like the actual state of your UI from a Silverlight application. It's really easy. You just basically say this.saveState and this.restoreState, and it crawls through your tree, finds out what all the values are, and then it'll crawl through them and push it back. And you do have the ability to do things like go through it and give save everything of type text box and only limit it to that kind of stuff. Cool. So that is the time that I have on here. So we've got a couple of minutes for Q&A, or what's
the... Yeah, and actually we have a question from Flickr.
I'm doing a Flickr augmented reality application. It's on my head.
So it's from RMAM2011. What is the difference between dormant and suspended?
So the question was, what's the difference between dormant and suspended? So dormant means that your values are all still in memory. So basically, okay, let's see if I can actually show difference on here. Yeah, so there's, essentially when you have a suspended application, suspended could relate to either the tombstone or the dormant version of the application. It's not receiving CPU processes, it's not CPU cycles, it's not being actively updated through there. And when you return back to the actual state, you get to figure out, so the suspended application just refers to anything that's not actively running. Dormant means values in memory, but not actively running. Tombstone is basically nothing inside of there, and you don't have access to that. You have to load them all back from isolated storage. Cool. So we got, how much time have we got between the next one?
Yeah, we got time for one or two questions.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the question was, if a phone is locked and you get a text message, it comes up with that toast. So how do you do that inside of your own application? We're going to cover that next session, right?
Yes.
So next session, Kevin's going to walk through how to do that. But essentially, it is it's a toast message. You can do that from another server. You can do that from inside of your application using a background task. So he'll go into that in depth. There was one over here, and then we'll take a break. What was that now? Okay, so the question was, when you're switching between applications, if you have a background audio agent running, will there be any pauses in the audio? There shouldn't be. So by design and everything, it should just be a seamless experience going from one application to another. So you should not see anything in there. One thing that I will mention on that one is that depending on if the user already has something playing in the background, your application should be polite, especially if you're looking at games, and they should ask, do you want to play my background audio, or do you want to continue listening to what you have? So if you're playing a game and somebody's listening to a podcast and you kill their podcast, they're not going to want to play your game anymore because they were looking at doing that in addition to something else they were already doing. You should be nice, and that's actually one of the ways that you can fail certification is if you're not polite to the user, if you don't allow them to get that choice between playing your music or theirs. Okay, so we've got time for questions towards like later on
yeah,
here.
So we're all going to be here after. We can answer as many questions. And tomorrow, we have a whole day for questions. So if you're not going to be here tomorrow, stay after. Whatever questions you have, we got a lot of guys that can answer.
Yep.
But for right now, let's take a break.
Yeah.
We got a 15-minute break that you can ask questions during. So and then we'll start back. Yes, back at 2:00.
Perfect.